technique, steam foam techniques, and some extension of the unification studies in four dimension at the classical level, and the connection of this with the dark energy. So this contained in the last page, I mean the last things that will be appear soon. So about unification in four dimension, working with Leonardo here, and the main part of the talk, so 85-90% will be based on the work with Stefan and Ruggero Tacchi. So let me start saying that I will first introduce the motivation for considering unification models, and I will talk about the two models of gravity weak unification that first appeared 5 years ago. And then we'll discuss the three-dimensional reduction and the Coleman-Mandura theorem, and then a particular model which we will introduce in terms of BF theory and exactly Prebaski spin 4 theory with a spontaneous symmetry breaking. And then it's spin foam quantization, and I will talk about the equivalent state that can be recovered for the two SU2 sectors which emerge from the spontaneous symmetry breaking, and the interpretation at the level of lattice pH theory and GR lattice. Then I will talk about, we'll show how it's possible to develop in this context of boundary formalism and keep track of the spin for bundle of the theory and make so some scattering on this easy three-dimensional context. And then we'll move to the four-dimensional stuff. I will show how it's possible to follow the same path for four dimensions, and we'll just sketch some things we are doing with Leonardo, and we'll soon have results to publish. And then, an application of a context of unification with dark energy. And then summary and conclusion. So let me first say that for the freedom, especially for the three-dimensional case, we want to start from a model which is a model of non-perturbable Abraham independent quantum gravity, quantization of gravity. And of course, this causes some challenges which are related to the fact that in order to have a clearer picture of what is going on, we should be able to derive an interpretation through an analysis of the matter fields of the interaction of matter fields, obtaining a background. So actually, so what we're saying is that we want to go through toward the possibility of doing some phenomenology out of the theory that we are considering. And then unification comes into this context as a novel way of introducing matter and having some connection between the sector of the unified groups. Especially in this case that I'm going to show you, I will consider unification of gravity with the Yamhill sectors. And so here, just a quick review of what happened 5 years ago. There were two works which appeared exactly in this month. June, actually. And these were by Nessie and Percati. For a couple of days, but the two works are similar but somehow different.
So they stole your idea. Somebody here communicates.
Was it Roberto here?
Roberto Percacci, yeah. Roberto
Percacci. He wasn't here in 2007.
I don't know.
He spent a year here, but it was late.
I don't know.
Somebody told me you were in Italy at that time.
I wasn't in Italy?
No, I'm just kidding.
Nah, I've never. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. The main idea is to use a complexify through 3-1 variables, or use SL2C connection variables, and consider self-dual anti-self-dual SU2 variables in the Aschgerer formulation, whether or not, in order to take into account the different chiralities and different coupling with chiral fermions, and in order to introduce also isospin group of standard model in the unified framework. And what happened also nicely is that in order to go toward this this description, we need a symmetry breaking, which select the global time lag directions and let emerge the two sectors. And especially Stefan was speculating about this chiral symmetry breaking connected to the violation of parity in GR. So mainly, I mean, what I want to say is that the main message is that if you have this symmetry breaking, the two sectors have some remaining connection, correlation between in the reduced phase space. And this is something similar to what happened in a recent study almost 2 years ago by Magheggio and Benincasa, in which they have the Barberi-Mirsi parameter enter in defining the different chiralities of a background expansion of the Hashteger variables on a de Sitter phase space. So they have the connection between the chiral dual and self-dual variable. So what we're doing now is different in the sense that is in the level of the unification, but it's similar in the sense that we'll have this correlation between the two sectors. So the strategy here is to start with an action, which is a BF theory plus constraint, but for a larger group than the usual one that we would consider if we are in four dimensions, so SO3-1 or spin-4 if you're doing the Euclidean version of the theory. And so the if we want to take into account not only gravity, but we want to take into account U1, for instance, we have to pick, we can pick a principal bundle of SNOM with N plus M, which is bigger than 5, because we want the root space, the dimension of the root space to be at least 3. So we have to go to 6. But here, we are going to study only only the study of the three-dimensional case, because this can be easily done, taking into account an extra Jan-Mills group, which is also an abelian. And it's a gauge group, which is Jan-Mills, so it's an abelian, and the one of gravity in 3D. And this is also a reason for doing that is that if you have this, yes?
Let's say 3D, mean 3D space-time or 3D space?
3D space-time.
Yes, okay, so it's two-dimensional space.
So it's two-dimensional space, yes.
Okay. But not
our universe.
Sorry? Not our universe.
Not our universe, after I will tell something about a way of extending this to our universe. So it's not our universe, but I mean, we're speculating about way of extending it. Also is a case in which we can understand well this connection between the two sectors. Because the problem when you do this kind of reduction from the unification group to the symmetry broken phase is that you have a non-trivial connection between the sectors. Here there are no non-trivial cosets for the symmetry group. That's why we picked this particular case.
What Nestor and I proposed was a classical view. We didn't have any quantum theory. It was all classical.
But so was your proposal 3D or was it?
No, what we did was 4D.
No, that was in 4D.
It was 4D, yeah. Since we motivated it from Hashteger variables, the idea was, well, let's work in a framework of three dimensions where we can see more clearly and have a better treatment of the quantum system.
While what you're doing with Leonardo is in 4D.
Okay.
And of course, dark energy work is in 4D.
Wow.
So, so let me say something very shortly about the Golem.
The evidence for the fourth dimension is more than the evidence for dark energy. So
if you don't talk with Julian Barber. let me say that we have a kind of no-go theorem that usually is invocated against unification. But this is not proper the way in which it's invocated, because what states the Golomb-Mandula theorem is that there is an impossibility of combining space-time and internal symmetries in any but a theoretical way. But The assumption is that the unification group is connected to symmetry group of the S matrix, that the unit operators commute with the S matrix, and that this G group has a subgroup which is locally Poincaré, plus other hypotheses on the symmetry matrix and the representation of the G generators in the momentum space. But what we're doing here, first of all, would evade this, this theorem because we are considering a group which is a spin force, so it's trivially SU2 cross SU2. But if we go to the four dimensions, so the most important case, and we are considering a background independent theory, this problem would not be arise. And this has been clearly shown in a paper by Roberto Percacci, that you can extend the Coleman-Bandura theorem into the case of, I mean, de Sitter space, so de Sitter group of isometry, but you cannot do that for any kind of non-trivial geometry that you're considering. So immediately you consider background independence, not this, this trace back. So let me then start saying more in particular what is this model that we were starting considering. So is a BF theory, which is this term. The indices here are indices in a general representation of spin 4, so it's six dimensional. And it's a BF theory plus constraints. It's a BF theory plus other things. It's a Plebansky spin 4 theory. And this B here stands for the wedge product of three B fields. So the B fields are one form which are spin 4 algebra valued. And Fi, F stands for the field strength of the connection A over spin 4 with spin 4 bundle. And Phi has got some indices, I, J, K, which so Phi are a multiplet of scalar fields. And so if we vary, so this B here and this Phi, so if we vary with respect to the fields, so with respect to the connection and then apply the Bianchi identity, we have the generator of the spin 4 gauge symmetries. If we vary with respect to the B field, we have the F constraint for the equation of motion. And then we have the analog of the simplicity constraint, which is expressed in terms of the B fields and of the phi fields. Here, G is a coupling constant, is the only coupling constant that, that we have, which is dimensional. So it's got dimension of length 2 minus 4. And then, so what we are going to do is consider the case in which there is a symmetry, spontaneous symmetry breaking, which appear, which occur depending on the coupling constant G for small value of the coupling constant G. So I will show in the next slide what does it mean, these answers. So mainly the thing is that when the symmetry breaking phase occur, you can consider your multiplex of phi field to decompose in a part which live in which are indices in the SU2 subgroups that after will become general relativity, and the other one which become SU2 EM-Mills. And mainly what we will find is that there is a relation between the two B fields, the one of the SU2 EM-Mills group and the one of the SU2 GR group. So the B of GR in three dimension is the triad. And then we have the B of EM-Mills, and there is a relation between them, which is obtained as proportional to 1/6 of the of G. So this can be seen if we consider the constraint, the simplicity, the analog of the simplicity constraint, and we solve it in respect to phi. And then if we do something similar to what Smolin did in four dimension in a paper in 2007, after 1 month after the famous paper of Garrett Lisi. So you can find the trivial solution of phi in the spin 4 theory without symmetric breaking. And then, I mean, this phi is the only phi that you can find, and is homogeneous in B, and is anti-symmetric in the indices. So if you now go in toward the symmetry breaking phase, if you want still something which is anti-symmetric, component which are anti-symmetric, they should be proportional to the epsilon in each SU2 sector, and they will be still, of course, homogeneous in B, and so they have to be constant. So the only way now of writing this phi field for dimension argument is to have them proportional to G, or to the inverse of the square root of the G coupling constant. So proportional to the G Newton, or the inverse of the square root of G. And so the factor can be just derived by consistency expanding, pulling back again this the first simplicity constraint, and deriving the factors. And then we have that the ansatz for the 2 phi phase broken component of the initial multiplets, spin 4 multiplets, are recovered. And then we can put it again in the simplicity constraint and derive the relation between the B fields, which give us this relation that we were selling before. So now what we can do is consider the theory and integrate out the phi field, so the multiplet, and see that we can then in this symmetry, spontaneous symmetry breaking phase, decompose the action in terms of a part which is a SU2 that we'll call GR, another part which is SU2 that we'll call Yamils, because from this term, using what we recovered from the simplicity constraint, we derive actually an action which is the action of gravity in three dimension, and the action of Yamils in an FF dual. All
right, so basically,
where dual is such dual. And you can do that here. I mean, we're using a spontaneous symmetry broken phase, but me, you can implement this this breakdown of symmetry also at a dynamical level. If you put fermion in this model, you can see that through an Hamboyan Alessinian model, you can have this symmetry, the symmetry breaking which occurred dynamically. So here we studied that in a spontaneous way. Sorry, Stefan, you were saying?
Yeah, I mean, so basically, to summarize, you start off with this enlarged, like, Lobansky action that's spin 4 invariant, right, subject to a constraint. You solve the field equations, you solve the field equations, and you end up with this action where you have Yamils and gravity.
Yeah, and indeed there's a piece actually that is missing in this relation. We find also a term with a cosmological constant. So we find a term which is proportional to the determinant of the triads E.
Sir,
yeah.
It's not easy for me to follow details here, but so you have E's and omegas are the geometry, and B and the A's are something else.
Yes, so, and B and A are the Yamils SU2 part
and
component.
And when you say BGR is gamma times B Yamils, that
yes.
Are you putting a constraint on it?
This is the constraint which come from. So when you vary the action, you have this three equation of motion. But this, the constraint which says that the two B are related, is this after spontaneous symmetry breaking occur?
Yeah, it's not clear to me how the top is related to the bottom. So various Yamils and various BGR in the origin of action.
So BGR in the origin of the action is this BI, which consists of 2B. Okay, so this is a one form which is valued in the algebra of spin 4, which is six dimensional. So it consists of two B's, one for the SU2 subgroup and another one for the other SU2 subgroup. So this BI is a BGR and comma a B and Mills.
Ah, so BI has both B and
Mills. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The indices should have been fine with you. IJK.
So it's buried in BI.
Yes.
So I runs over about 1 to 6 or something.
Yeah.
Okay. And what about A? Is that also a 1 to 6 kind of
A
object?
You mean this A? Which
no,
A?
I mean capital A.
Yes, A is also a connection on a spin fork.
But again, Yann-Mills and GR connection or a what?
Is Yann-Mills and GR connection. I mean, what after will become Yann-Mills and GR connection?
So you take sort of a Chern-Simons action that's got two chunks in it, and one chunk is GR and the other chunk is Yann-Mills, and you stitch it together.
Yes, but with an interaction term.
Yeah. You stitch it together with that as that interaction.
Yes.
And capital phi is what?
Capital phi is a multiplet of Lagrange multiplier, scalar fields.
So it's like matter fields.
Yes, indeed. That what happens is
it's cubic, right? It has no kinetic energy.
This is very important. It's not propagating. Yes, exactly.
So phi is a Lagrange multiplier.
Yes.
Except it's not.
It's not cubic.
It's cubic. So it's not a normal branch multiplier.
So I guess then my question would be that shouldn't it get a kinetic term from quantum corrections or something? Because I mean if you have a nonlinear auxiliary field, I guess there's no guarantee that you don't get a kinetic term for it from quantum correction.
Well, no, well, at the classical level, clearly not. But at the quantum level, this is indeed a question that would arise. And somehow, we can trace back, I mean, this question if we perform the same analysis, dynamical symmetry breaking, and instead of this Lagrange multiplier, we have something else. So we have a condensate of fermions. So for this case, I think this question should not worry us.
Okay, and just, I think we said before, I'll be clear. So without the phis, that B wedge F term would decouple into Yann-Mills and GR completely separate.
Yes. Yes, yes.
So it's only the phis that allow those sectors to know.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Otherwise, it would be just a trivial topological BF theory consisting of two separate SU2 sectors, which are independent. So this make the two sectors to be dependent. Okay. So.
On that slide here again, so they interact via that Born-Infeld sort of term, right? The square root thing.
This comes.
So you got an E wedge F and a B wedge F and A.
Where you said
that
this slide?
That square root thing.
That's the square root thing comes from. Let me go.
What you did on the other slide.
Let me go to this. This other slide in which is more clear what happens. So in this slide, what you do is, I mean, you consider the original action with phi, and you insert this, okay? So this this solution for phi, which comes from the simplicity constraint. Let me call it in this way. And, this norm means the square root of this component here, okay? And so basically, is how the square root enter in this. So you said is somehow similar to the DBI action.
Well, the square root of any fields reminds me of Born-Infeld.
Yeah, but after by using some relation, on the contraction of the trials field, you get rid of this as a simple E term, a simple determinant of the trials. Okay, so and I mean, actually, this was just to show more concretely what happened. So what happened is that so you substitute this, then you make the spontaneous symmetry break of the phase, and then you reshuffle all these terms using the relation between BGR, which is E, and BM Mills, which is just B now. And then, I mean, after a little bit of manipulation, you arrive to this form, okay, of the action, and you vary and you find the equation of motion for F, F Yam Mills, and these are related to the object dual of B. And then you write the action that I wrote before. So the idea here is then if you want to quantize this model, so and here come probably the part on which there could be more more questions. So how can I do that? So how can I do that? I mean, the idea is to try to quantize this as a BF theory plus constraint, where the constraint now are imposed at the level of the symmetry breaking phase. So throw the relation between the two B's. And I mean, in order to do this this quantization, we usually, I mean, we do what is commonly do. So I mean, we consider to introduce an oriented triangulation over our manifold, three-dimensional manifold, and pick me the dual of this. So we have, in particular, we select the point of the triangulation segments on the triangulation and triangle, of course, on the two-dimensional hypersurfaces. And then we have the dual, which are these edges, which meet at the vertices. And then we have the faces of the dual triangulation. It is a cellular complex. And then, because of this, we are going to smear our variable for the Brogan phase. So our SU2 B variables for the Yam Mills phase and our SU2 variables for the GR phase has fluxes through orthogonal to the segments S, and we do the same also for the other conjugated variables, and we calculate the holonomy over the edges, which are dual to the segments. And then doing that, we have automatically a symplectic structure, which is that one of a SU2 lattice gauge theory for the GR sector and for the Yam Mills sector. Okay, and so we'll have that the Poisson brackets for the B will be will be proportional to the SU2 epsilon for each sector times the B, and the action of the B on the U will be Hess left invariant derivative. And then we can construct here on the cotangent bundle of this this space, we can construct our Hilbert space of cylindrical function. And so holonomies are represented as multiplicative on the cylindrical function as fluxes as left invariant derivative. And so basically this is the way in which we loop quantize. And then we calculate, we allow, I mean, transition between states which live on the boundaries of a manifold, a three-dimensional manifold through a spin foam. And this spin foam is achieved through the imposition of the relation that we find from the two B's. So what happened is that the simplicial constraint for the Brogan phase is a relation between the gravitation and the Yam Mills B. And this is actually a situation which is reminiscent to what happened in gravity in four dimension, okay, in which we have if you look at it in the spin 4 case, so in the Euclidean case, we have two sectors, and we have a relation between the two SU2 through a second class constraint. So what we're doing is exactly the same, quantize the second class constraint weakly, and obtain then the relation between the two Casimir of the two SU2 through this gamma, again, which connected to a reducible representation. And this enter into the expression of the partition function. So we'll have a part, which will be sum over the J gravitational irreducible representation of the SU2, which is gravitational, and sum over the Yamil's irreducible representation will be gamma times the gravitational irreducible representation.
So for gamma equal 1, you have the square of
the
gravity theory.
For gamma equal 1, you have the square of gravity theory, yes. Well, it's not really a square. Yeah, you have a square, yes, exactly. Gamma equal 1 corresponds to a particular value of g, not of a perturbative value of g. So in that case, you would be out of the spontaneous symmetry breaking regime that we are considering here, which is in g small. Because the solution of because the relation between the two b that we have recovered has been recovered for an expansion in g small. So before I've shown that was.
You can think of so this gamma as an establishment of a hierarchy between the gravitational and the gauge strength. Because it depends on a coupling constant, the relative coupling constant between the two units. That's the extent.
Is gamma big or small?
Gamma, you have to think to gamma as small. Because it's proportional to g, to the 1/6 of g.
So Yang's powerful gravity is weak. No, gamma is small, so it's the other way.
Yeah.
So gamma g.
So if you send g to 0, you end up only with the partition function of gravity. So you have only the part mean quantized theory gravity.
Isn't that sort of backwards to the real world? I mean, the real world is powerful.
If you look at let's go to the lattice analysis later and will be more clear.
No, but this is just the ratio of the spin for Young's Mills and gravity, right? J
yes.
is a spin.
Sorry?
J is angular momentum, right?
Well, it's yes, the SU2 representation that you're considering when you
so
Fourier
just,
expand, yes.
So it just means that your SU2
situation with coupling strengths as well. I thought that's what
Stefan said. No,
it's
the spins.
Well, I see it's there with the spins, but I thought you also said it was the coupling
strengths.
The
infrared
limit of gauge theory. The usual RJ, which is the infrared limit of gravity, is the neutrality.
Yeah, I mean, these are three dimensional situations.
I know it's asymptotically free to build, but
yeah,
so it's fine.
I think I mean also. Sorry, yes, Eta.
I'm not sure I understand how you get to this relation gamma, what Young is called gamma, and GR. Is it just a sector of the theory?
Is it just, sorry?
Is it just a sector of your theory after symmetry breaking or something?
Yes.
So do you have actually the model, the model for the full model?
No.
Full constraint?
No. No.
Discretized, but
no.
You can show, but.
No.
No,
this would be the thing that we would like to do, but. Yes.
Okay, if j equal to 1, how do you get a spin?
Is j is?
J equal to 1, how do you get a spin smaller than 1? How do you define
if I mean, is
how do you define the 6 gamma j's? I mean, the spins are supposed to be integers, so I don't know what you mean by.
Oh, okay, yes. Okay, so it's small, but yes, of course. No, this is a good point, of course, yes. So it should allow, I mean, integral numbers. So, I mean, actually, this select only some value of the coupling constant G. It can be small, but always such that, I mean, you have a gamma which is consistent with, at the end, having a Yamil's reducible representation, which makes sense, yes. This. Yes, this is a good point, yes. yeah, I mean, and then, I mean, we can give the holonomy representation of this partition function in terms of integration on a bulk variable which are spin 4. And here is the propagation kernel with at zero time, which is expanded on the two reducible representation, of course. So it is a representation of the two of spin 4 for J and the other J, which is gamma J.
Can you define what G is?
G is an element of spin 4. G big. Sorry?
G is an element of spin 4. I mean, what object is that? What's W?
This?
W is like a path.
Oh, W is the holonomy representation of the interaction in the theories of the spin form amplitude. Okay, so you can think of it as a state that if you send, if you do, I mean, if you project on a state which live on the boundary, give you the amplitude an amplitude for the.
No, I know what it is in this sense.
Yeah. And so, and then we can also construct, Yamil sectors. A coherent state for this theory, which now will be constructed in terms of we'll have a parameter. We'll account of a group element HL, which is SU2 for each subgroup, and of course not all the six parameter of the SL2C element, but only a subspace of these parameters, because in the ZL complex number there is information on the length of the lattice for the GR and for the Yamil lattice and on the Dirichlet angle, but then we have the normal on the segments, which now are on two dimensions, so we have only a U1 possibility of rotating them. This state then can be written this way, as usual, in 4D, and we can write also this the large spin asymptotic of this, which introduces us, the concept of the ideal angle and length of the lattice for the GR part, but also the equivalent for the Yamil's part. But the two pictures now should be considered connected by the fact that naturally through this picture emerged that the dihedral angle for the Yamil's sector has a gamma square rescaling, and that the length for the Yamil sector has a 1 over gamma rescaling. So when gamma gets small, the lattice of the Yamil's has divergent behavior because the dihedral angle goes to 0. So and we can, yep.
Question. So should I think of this lattice of the Yang-Mills as like a cutoff scale for the?
Sorry?
So the, when you say lattice of the Yang-Mills.
Yes.
This is like a cutoff scale for the Yang-Mills theory? Or?
Well, it's not a cutoff that is introduced by hand. It's the usual cutoff that you have, which is not a cutoff, that is a regulator which comes from, the quantization scheme that you can find in quantum gravity for the gravitational part. It's like, I don't know, you quantize the harmonic oscillator and, you have a...
Yeah, I guess I'm not...
Level,
so which are quantized. For the Yang-Mills is renormalizable, but I guess you're talking about a 3D theory.
Yes.
So what is
supernormalizable?
Yes.
So...
It doesn't have... Super-duper
renormalized. Yeah. So that doesn't really need the regulator, does it? Yeah,
it doesn't need the regulator.
But the gravity is still not normalizable in 3D. Right. So I'm just trying to see what is the physical significance of this cutoff, because you don't really
No. You don't need here. But this is a place in which we can see what happened to the theory, and so we can extrapolate what potentially can happen to the 4D case. Of course, here is. I mean, who cares about what happened in 3D for Yamils? But
you care, apparently.
Well, not in the sense that it's the most important in my life.
Okay.
Is there, just recalling the equations, is there some kind of duality here if I switch the E and B of the connections?
Yes. There's a gamma duality, we could say. Yes.
Yeah. Then, so renormalizability, if Yang Mills is renormalizable, then doesn't that force gravity to be renormalizable? They're dual to each other, unless this interaction screws it up.
Ah, yeah. That's a good point. Yes, thank you.
But I mean, it's exactly like it's a pair of theories knitted together with that square root.
Yeah.
And then if
you
switch everything around, it's exactly the same thing. So that's a rather powerful set of symmetries, it seems to be.
Thank you. This is a very nice point.
It's like electromagnetic duality, in a sense.
Yeah, except it's
So now we consider a cow. And,
but we didn't notice that until you mentioned it. So.
And we make a triangulation of this. So we consider the boundary formalism in three dimensions, so and on the boundary of the three dimensional space. And so we pick the easiest closed surface, so sphere. And we consider this is triangulation of that, which is a tetrahedron. And then, I mean, what we want to do is to calculate here a two-point function. So if we're calculating a two-point function, so we know that there is a reconstruction theorem which allows from the knowledge of the Wilson loop to reconstruct the spin-4 bundle of the theory. Principal bundle of the theory. But here what we want to do is to consider expectation value of Wilson loop, because we can do that with base point x and y, which lie on the surface of the sphere that after we triangulate. And if we do that using this simplex, this very simple simplex, so tetrahedron spin network, we will have that the two loop will share a link, and we can now calculate this amplitude, which we want to connect to this two-point function. Why we want to connect to a function is clear though, from physical point of view, and we have a formalism to do that. I mean, Leonardo worked a long time ago with Carlo Rovelli on the development of this formalism. And I mean, what you do basically, you consider the formulation in terms of the spin-4 gauge, spin-4 group element that I was showing before. So the holonomy representation for the spin-4 vertex. And you do the expectation value on the boundary state, which leave the boundary of my manifold. Of this two holonomy. And we do that with the coherent state that we have introduced before. And this gives us a result that, of course, we should study more in detail. But in principle, the idea is that it's possible to do that. It's possible to do that, and we have here there's some ugly coefficients, which are a contraction of 12 Wigner 3J symbols, the one for. The gravitational part and the one for the Yamils part. And then we have, so these are the weights of the coherent state that we are considering for the gravitational and for the Yamils part with the dihedral angle for both the lattices. And these are mid-trivial three-valent intertwiner numbers. So basically, I mean, this just to show that it's possible to do some calculation in this very simple theory. Now let me go to something which is I care more in my life, which is four dimension. And of course, we would like to extend to four dimension what we have studied before. So it's a possibility we can speculate about is that could be possible to have an extension to four dimension considering extension through degenerate sectors of gravity in four dimensions. So we know that gravity is in three dimension is topological, but because I mean we have the curvature constraint, we have the 2D fields and the gauge constraint. But if we add, for instance, some complex field, we have degrees of freedom. So the conjecture is would be possible. So it's a question we don't know. It would be possible to describe some configuration of gravity plus matter as configuration which are degenerate in the four dimensional in the four dimensional degenerate case. So this is something that we would like to, of course, to look more in detail. But for the moment, what we do is we start again from the formulation of the theory at the classical level, and we do what we were saying that we would like to do in four dimensions. So we consider this SNOM principal bundle and with n plus m bigger than 5. And now what we want to argue is that this is interesting not only from the perspective of unifying gravity with some Yamhill sectors, but also from the perspective of unifying gravity with some Yamhill sector that we don't observe, so some dark Yamhill sector. Because in this scheme, the hierarchy problem, which I mean the look at the hierarchy problem, which comes from the unification theory, can give some hints on some problem that we can develop here. And I will show an example of this, which can be dark energy. So this work in progress with Stefan and Leonardo. Of course, I mean, this is something that, I mean, a lot of people are studying in the last years. I mean, it's starting from Capovilla, Smalling, Andy Randano, Simone, that studied also the three-dimensional case, and Garrett Lisi, et cetera, et cetera. So the example in which we can have a kind of unification, which is unification with gravity and the Yamhill's dark sector, can be the case of dark energy. So I want to show you something to conclude this seminar about this perspective. And Stefan will talk much more about this tomorrow. So I mean, please come to the seminar of Stefan because.
So, of course.
Yeah.
So when you say Yamhill's, you mean SU2 Yamhill's or?
No.
It could be any.
Yeah.
But what you've done so far is this, right?
In three dimensions, yes.
In three dimensions, right? But you think in five dimensions you could have any group?
Yes, yes. I mean, here we have analyzed the easiest case. Of course, after I mean, you just pick a gauge group that has a certain number of Cartan subalgebras and so on. I mean, you can have a root, the dimension of the root space, which is the one that you want to have to describe physics. That's unary speaking.
The thing at the end of the day that will constrain you in terms of what the rank of your dark Yamhills will be, of course, the number of flavors, because you need the theory to be confined.
You need a theory to be confined. Which theory?
The dark Yamhills.
Why?
I'm going to show it. Just strap. So this work in progress with Stefan and David Spergel, and we have a good point, so probably we hope during this month we'll have something on the archive. So the idea is that we have the Yamhill sectors that we already know, which is the one of the standard model, and then we have another Yamhill sector, okay, which is this dark Yamhill sector. And suppose this SU3, dark Yamhill sector, such a way that we have confinement. And then of course, I mean, we have to introduce some covariant derivatives with these dark Yamhill sectors in the fermionic current. And polar interactions. And then, as a remnant of this this dark Yamil sector in a unified perspective, there will be some Goldstone boson. Okay, so here we have a copy of the pion Lagrangian. So this is not the usual pion Lagrangian, but is a dark pion. Okay, so it is a Goldstone boson for this theory. And then, I mean, we have gravity and all the things that we know. And let me write explicitly this term, which is an interaction between an SU2 subgroup of the dark SU3 Yamil sector that will come in here in this background from the perspective of unification. So let's say gravity unified with some other things which break down to gravity plus this dark SU3. And this is the SU2 subgroup of this dark SU3. And I mean, here I just sketch how things are going. And Stefan will give a talk tomorrow. So if we pick a particular gauge for this configuration, and we solve for isotropic and homogeneous solutions that are possible for these SU2 gauge fields, if you pick direction of the gauge indices and projected on the direction of the space indices, and you consider a particular state, it's a BCS state for these pion, dark pions, which enter as a Goldstone boson in our theory.
That's dynamic. That's a dynamic.
Yeah. So what you get is that starting from the last from the Gabrik.
Okay, so yeah. Is there a group SU2 or SU3?
The A. So the A, I mean, so this is a SU2 subgroup of SU3.
No, but it's the original thing SU3.
Yes.
So you have dark SU3 angles, dark
yes.
Fermions transformed what like quarks.
No, no, they're not dark fermions. They're fermions that.
On the previous slide.
Yeah,
fermions.
Yeah, they transform under the.
So are they standard model fermions?
The dark.
Well, the dark.
So you have dark angles, dark fermions, dark pion, right?
Yeah.
The LSM is all the normal stuff people see at the LHC, right?
Yes. Okay. Indeed, is this already a version of a theory, a phenomenological version of this, which has been worked out by
Sandro.
Yes.
And you want to break the dark SU3 to a dark SU2 subgroup. Is that right?
Well, this is something we have still to work out. But let us say that we want to consider a SU2 subgroup of this SU3, dark SU3.
There's a rotationally invariant subgroup of any SUN theory to make it consistent with the FRW geometry. Yes, so it is that you're looking at solutions that are purely homogeneous and isotropic for the gauge field, mm-hmm. and that's a solution. So you're projecting out the other components. It's like what you do when you have a texture field, right?
And so for the surface of La Scattering, you have that very fast you recover an equation of state parameter which is -1 if consistently with observation about the vacuum state you have the amplitude of this SU2 subgroup of SU3 is EV scale and so I leave to Stefan tomorrow to talk widely about this this model. But I mean, the main message here is that we can have this dark extra sector, and we would like to argue about the existence of this dark extra sector from a unified perspective. This is not the only one. And I mean, usually, this, I mean, the unification, I mean, way of seeing this come associated with string theory. So this is another perspective of looking into that. I mean, it traces back to this idea of gravity-weak unification, that we have similarity between two kind of forces that are weak, so I mean gravitation and the weak interactions, and we have similarity between you know, the potentials and so on. So in this case, would be the appearance of an extra dark mean sector, the SU3 mean sector, which has a scale which are lower with respect to the one that we know, but works in the same way.
What are those graphs showing us?
Oh, this the equation is W.
That's
URL.
W.
Yeah.
Versus time. Or?
Versus time, but time. Time is in years, actually.
So why is one going down and the other is going up?
Because you cannot see. I mean, if you start, I mean, the Gaussian surface, I mean, so this goes down too fast. So this is a zoom of the.
So like in the early universe, it goes down, but in the late universe,
no.
From
last scattering.
Unlike other dark energy models, this one actually goes back to a radiative state.
Dark energy on the radiative equation. So,
go back,
yeah. When are we in that graph? I can't see the numbers.
Well, we are here.
We're there.
Yeah.
So, you have, I assume, enough parameters to make sure that dark energy remains like dark energy for now.
Yes. Yes. It actually mean what regulate this is the velocity of the gauge fields. I mean, the initial velocity of the gauge fields is that parameter that regulate the width of this.
This will require yet again another stability analysis, but we actually have W now. You know,
why is it dark energy and not dark matter without fermion?
Could be also dark matter. Could be also dark matter.
I'll talk about that.
But I leave to Stefan to.
Well, I guess he needs to do the stability analysis, I guess, to see whether the speed of sound is 0 or 1.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what we are doing.
For dark matter, speed of sound is to be small.
Yes, and what we're doing.
But there's nothing weird. I mean, it's a yang, the whole spermion dark energy, which is nothing weird. So it shouldn't have
any
pathological properties. There's no reason to expect.
Well, no, just phenomenologically, for it to be dark matter, you need to have a small speed of sound.
Well, sure, you can make it that way. I don't see anything that would disrupt that.
But I think also you want the W to be minus 1. So, I mean, the question is, can
okay.
you do both at the same time?
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, this is an issue. And look, this is not yet been done in literature. So, you have, that's right, W is minus 1. What you want to do, since what's actually causing this dark energy behavior is an interaction energy between the pions and the gluons. What you want to do is perturb that system around that point and see that you get
see if it's not superluminal
right.
or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this means we won't accelerate forever. We'll slow down.
We're saved.
You're saved. You're saving us. You're saving
me. Sorry. I am your saving.
I will sleep well at night.
That goes away.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay, so this was basically the last slide. So it's That's all.
Thank you.